as Lutherans, we believe that pastors aren't hired. They're not employed by churches at all. Instead, God sends pastors to churches, just as God sent Paul to the different churches on his ministry journeys.
You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are continuing our Set Apart to Serve series, talking about the joy of serving as a pastor today. Thanks to Concordia University, Wisconsin for supporting The Coffee Hour. You can find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin at cuw.edu.
Live uncommon.
Joining us today, the Reverend Peter DeBerney, pastor of Grace Lutheran Church in Mastic Beach, New York. Pastor DeBerney, welcome to The Coffee Hour.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
All right, before we get into your story, I realized I don't know where Mastic Beach, New York is. Where is Mastic Beach, New York?
So Mastic Beach is on Long Island, which means it's about 50 miles east of New York City. So I'm about a two-hour drive from the city itself. So you think Mastic Beach, think just a skip away from the city. So New York City, basically.
I like how 2 hours is a skip away. New York City.
people actually commute from Mastic Beach to the city every morning. So, oh yeah.
That's a bit of a commute.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. They'll take the train or they'll drive through rush hour traffic. Some people leave 3:30 in the morning to get to the city every morning. It's pretty crazy.
Now, what's your commute look like?
It's about a 2-second walk.
Nice.
My parsonage is about three houses down from the church, so it's pretty nice.
Now, where are you in relation to the beach, since you're in Mastic Beach?
We're about 3 miles north of the beach, the South Shore, so we got sandy beaches, all that, and plan to go to the beach after we have our conversation today. Got a dog I bring down there, go for walks there. It's pretty cool.
I love it.
Well, let's talk about how you came to be a pastor at Grace Lutheran Church in Mastic Beach, New York. Who influenced you to even consider formation and becoming a pastor?
Well, I didn't want to get into theology right away, but I'm going to do it anyway. My story really shows the divine call. And you probably heard this before, right? As Lutherans, we believe that pastors aren't hired. They're not employed by churches at all. Instead, God sends pastors to churches, just as God sent Paul to the different churches on his ministry journeys. I think the same thing is true with the divine call when someone who is young feels God sending them to be a pastor. And I think my story is pretty evident of that. When I was young, 7 years old, my parents, good LCMS parents that they were, they took me to church every Sunday, and the church had a Lutheran school associated with it. And I remember in second grade, I saw that my pastor, he would come visit us and come and just say hi, hug the kids. He would tell us Bible stories. And I saw my pastor, and I said, that's what I'm going to do one day. I'm going to be a pastor just like him. That was God. That was the divine call. No one in my family was a pastor. Dad wasn't a pastor. Grandpa wasn't a pastor. Both my parents are doctors. My sister's in nursing. My brother's in med school. All medicine. Logically, I'd end up being a doctor too, but no, God pulled me. He called me to be a pastor, and that was the start of my journey. At 7 years old, I knew and never changed I was going to be a pastor for his church.
I love that. That's so cool. So where does that go from seven-year-old through what was the rest of your journey to becoming a pastor?
Well, I like to call myself, I'm a system guy. So I do what the seminaries like us to do. I went to a Lutheran middle school, went to a Christian high school, and then, okay, what's next? The Concordia University system, of course. And so I wanted to do the pre-sem program, and I wanted to get away from New York for a little bit. I grew up in New York, up in Buffalo, Niagara Falls area, but I said, you know what? Let's get away. Let's go to Nebraska. So I went to Concordia, Nebraska, the pre-sem program there, and that's kind of where I really fell in love with Lutheran theology and our Lutheran practice. I got my Greek and Hebrew there in the pre-sem program, felt very, very equipped and prepared as I went to Concordia Seminary St. Louis, and there I did my studies. I got my vicarage assignment my third year. Sure enough, went back to New York, went to Long Island, spent a year there under Pastor Jeffrey Browning, then went back to the seminary for my fourth year, and then God called me, guess where? Back to New York. Couldn't get away. And I ended up on Long Island once again to serve the people here. And I have found here on Long Island, there are so many faithful Christians hungry to hear the gospel. There's such a need here. And so I have a lot of joy of being a pastor here on the island.
You grew up in the Buffalo area. Now you live on Long Island. Those are two very different places.
Oh, yes. Very different. I was technically a New Yorker when I came from Buffalo, but now I am a true New Yorker, being close to the city, for sure.
They even have different accents in different parts of the state. So.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Some people have told me that Buffalo is Midwest. I don't know if I believe that, though.
Interesting.
So that was quite a journey, and it sounds like you enjoyed the journey. It sounds like being a student all along the way. And now coming back to New York and serving as a pastor in New York, what gives you joy in being a pastor and serving the saints that you get to serve on a regular basis?
One of the biggest things for me and what motivated me to keep going throughout the years of formation to become a pastor was I saw the need. I really felt needed as a pastor, and not me personally. I'm just a lowly sinner like we all are. But rather the vocation of pastor. I am a slave to God, I like to say. And slave often has negative connotations these days, but when we have a benevolent master like our Lord Jesus, being a servant of God is a great thing. And as a slave to God, as a pastor, I am Christ's representative to people. When people see me, they see a reflection of Jesus and his love for them. And so I'm so filled with joy when I see the Spirit of God working in the people I care for as Christ's representative. Give you an example. When I go to the hospital, one of my favorite things to do as a pastor, I think about when I'm going to be old one day and maybe my family will be here, maybe they won't, and I might be alone suffering in a hospital. Will someone come see me? Does someone care enough about me to come visit me? I hear all the time in church that Jesus cares. Jesus loves me. Will the representative of Jesus come to see me? When I go to hospital visits and no one's come to visit these people and they see me, I see the tears on their face because they see that Jesus still cares about them, even in their lowest moments, even when they're sick, even when they're constantly in pain, even when they may have no family left. I see the joy in their faces, and that it humbles me, but also fills me with joy as I see the Spirit working with them. And even more than that, I'm not just a social worker going to visit them. I get to deliver a promise to them, real hope, that there will be true healing. Even pain is just temporary. Christ will come with healing, either in this life or the next. I can give them assurance that because Jesus lives, we shall live also. There is no message more important than that. And how humbling it is that a sinner like me, I'm the one who gets to deliver it. And that's one of the things that gives me joy as a pastor, for sure.
Tell us a little bit more about the people that you get to serve. Because, I mean, obviously, you are so excited about this vocation of being a pastor. And I want to know who those people are that you get to serve every day.
Well, I love New Yorkers. I love New Yorkers. They're very different than the Midwest because I went to Nebraska and I got to see the people that, you know, you get to a four-way stop and all the three of them wait for you to go first. Like, you know, I've seen the Midwestern folk, and I love New Yorkers too. New Yorkers often get a bad rap of being like, you know, stuck up and then they don't care. And sometimes that, you know, stereotype can be true in some ways. But what I found about New Yorkers, especially New Yorkers on Long Island, is if you're one of them, you're one of them. And they will love you to the end. They will care about you to the end. And I have seen that in this congregation so much with the relationships I've built with these people. That they tell me things like, Pastor, I'll follow you wherever you go. Whoa, okay, that's a little scary. But they'll follow me following Jesus, so I guess that's a good thing. Once you earn their respect and love, they just shower it upon you. And that's one of the big things I've learned in my short time in the ministry. What's the most important time in the church service on a Sunday morning? The theological answer is, of course, it's word and sacrament. It's preaching the word. It's giving God's gifts. And I agree with that. But on a purely relational level, It's right before and right after the service is done. When you can have one-on-one conversations with the people in your congregation, when you can be Christ's representative to people on a personal level, does pastor smile at me? Is he willing to listen to me? And when they build that trust with you, you just see the joy on their face. The people that come up to me and give me full embraces after service, it's humbling and it's just awesome seeing God at work in these people for sure. Thanks, Sarah. That's a great question.
Now I'm curious what fellowship looks like.
Oh, I want to go.
On Long Island. What does fellowship look like for you as a pastor and those you get to serve, that being so important to you? What does that look like? A lot of congregations around here on Sunday morning, it might be coffee and donuts. Is it coffee and donuts or are there bagels? I mean, what does fellowship look like for you on Long Island as a pastor?
It's bagels, it's donuts, it's coffee, but I'm around a bunch of Italians, so it's a lot of them. We are never short on the food and the cake, and it's just awesome. Again, after the service is over, just seeing people hang around the church talking with each other for half an hour. Sometimes I'm here 2 hours that the service is done, and they're still here talking and caring and serving. And that's what people really need. They really need that fellowship with each other to show that there's someone who cares about them. And as the pastor, I have the chance to lead by example. Will I reach out to people? I've gone to churches where I've sat in the middle of the sanctuary, in the middle of the pew, and I just did a test. Would anyone come up and talk to me? I've been to churches where not a single person came up and talked to me, and that really hurt. But as the pastor, you get a chance, you can show people, hey, I'm going to go up and talk to this person at the beginning of the service. I'm going to go up and shake everyone's hand. I sometimes stand outside the door and have people walk by and I greet everyone. And people learn from that. I can lead by example. So sometimes churches are really good at fellowship. Sometimes they need to practice a little bit. And I can lead the congregation that way. And it's another joy of being a pastor, seeing people follow my lead there for sure.
We're talking about the joy of being a pastor in our Set Apart to Serve series today with Pastor Peter DeBerney of Grace Lutheran Church in Mastic Beach, New York. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment right here on the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
At Concordia University, Wisconsin, we believe you were created for a reason, to use your God-given gifts to help others. To live a life of self-sacrifice in a me-first world. To live a life that's uncommon. Whether you're taking one of 50-plus online programs or learning with us in person on the shores of Lake Michigan, you'll be equipped to make an uncommon impact. Learn more at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Live uncommon.
Welcome back to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are in the Set Apart to Serve series today, talking about the joy of being a pastor with the Reverend Peter DeBerney of Grace Lutheran Church in Mastic Beach, New York. Pastor, you've painted a nice picture for us of the joy that you find in serving as a pastor to the lovely saints at Grace Lutheran Church. What about when it becomes challenging? I'm sure that there are challenges in being a pastor. How do you stay sustained in the joy of God's word when you are faced with challenges in your vocation?
Well, absolutely there are challenges. And I found one of the biggest challenges of being a pastor is you can't be wishy-washy and you can't just make everyone like you. Man, it would be great if I could just be the most popular person in the room at all times. But as a pastor, not only am I called to speak in love, but I'm called to speak the truth in love. And the truth is sometimes divisive. I remember the first couple months of my ministry were pretty tough because I came in saying, we are going to speak the truth. And some people did not agree. Some people who had been members of this church for a long time just straight up left. And that was very hard for me. Maybe there was a seed of doubt or two in my heart. Am I doing the right thing? So the first thing, of course, is I remain constant in prayer. prayer to God and constant in the scriptures, constant in our Lutheran confessions, right? Continuing to learn. You know, once you reach ordination, you're not done learning. It's a constant process. And so continuing to be in the scriptures, learning, and so that I can guide this congregation the right way. And when the difficulties come, it's cool. I was able to build relationships with my circuit pastors in my circuit, and be able to confide in them some of the difficulties I have. Nowadays, I think I told you I've been appointed circuit visitor. So now pastors come and talk to me about all the things bugging them. And it's my pleasure to do that and care for them, be a pastor to pastors. But finding someone I can confide in was so very important for those early months. And of course, now when challenges come, I have a vice president or two I can call up. I have our district president I can always call up. And our district president, he is like A-plus kind of guy. If you've met him, Sarah, like he's just got that personality and that vigor for ministry. And I know I can confide in him and trust in him when those challenges come, for sure.
Yeah, we do like Bishop Taylor around here. He's a good guy.
Yes.
You're
always
about,
moving.
Yeah, that's true. You're talking about the community that you've been a part of as a pastor. How else are you able to take that this joy of ministry, but also that the community that you're talking about? How else have you found yourself in different communities in your own local area, but also just around your district as well?
We'll start with the community. It's really cool. We've got a lot of young families in this area, and we're working on evangelizing to these people. Every Christmas, we've got a Christmas parade, and we're going to be in that parade. We're going to have a float. We're going to invite people to church. We're going to hand out flyers that people might know. Hey, come to Christmas service with us. We have a night in Bethlehem every Christmas. We come to the church and see the story of Jesus. Come one, come all. You're all invited. Every year we have a VBS program. In fact, just last week we concluded our VBS program. We invite anyone. Anyone come. There's no cost. Come and hear the story of Jesus. Some of these kids have never opened a Bible before. Some of these kids have never heard the story of Jesus before, and we want to be their first exposure to the gospel of Jesus. This congregation, again, is on fire for the gospel and wants to work, wants to serve. Sometimes it can be a challenge to find the best opportunities for this, because more so now than ever, you know, people don't really open their door to strangers, right? You know, the knock on the door ministry. I mean, when's the last time you enjoyed opening the door to a complete stranger at home, right? When you're at home, please don't talk to me. I found that's what most people, but we find opportunities. You know, our church is right on the street corner. Some people come by, strangers will walk in this door, and we want to be able to serve them, care for them. And we have many servant leaders in this congregation equipped to care for our community as well. You mentioned the circuit as well. Just now, every 3 years, our bishop has made it really important that we have a convocation. We as Lutherans say we're all on the same team. We work together. We're confessional, which is great. That's awesome on paper. But if you never see your fellow Lutherans, are we really on the same team? If we never meet each other at different congregations, how can we say we know each other? And so the bishop's really big. In fact, I just became circuit visitor in May, and June, he said, Vice President David Wackenhuth came up to me and said, oh, by the way, you're going to lead the Circuit 9 convocation. Get ready to plan an event of fellowship with 10 different congregations. Okay, we're going to do that. And so in September, we're going to have just a nice picnic of fellowship. We're going to have live music there. The congregations from the circuit are all invited to join us. We get to know each other a little bit, to have fellowship, not just with our individual congregations, but with each other. We are synod. We walk together. And how cool is that, they're all on fire to get started with that. I'm really excited about that.
What does that mean to you as a parish pastor to have that support, especially of your district bishop and others in your district, your circuit, that your fellow pastors there? What does it mean to you to have that support?
Well, I've seen a lot of pastors fall into the lone wolf mentality, where they feel completely isolated by themselves. And I have found when pastors feel alone, their holistic health suffers. Holistic health, you know, we're more than just one thing. We have mental health, we have physical health, and we have spiritual health. But when we are alone, we have no one to rely on. Who is Christ's representative to us? And so it gives me a lot of comfort to know I have someone I can turn to immediately. If I'm having a rough day, I can call up my district president. He's only a phone call away. I can text him. He'll text right back. I can talk to my fellow pastors in my circuit. I know I can be cared for. Pastors need to be cared for, too. Sometimes we forget about that. And I have a good support network to do that, for sure.
Talk about how your congregation or your circuit or your district, how you've seen encouraging young people to become church workers. I mean, your story is a one of, you know, seeing a pastor just do pastoral things and knowing that that was what you were going to do. How have you seen your district and your church encourage young people to consider these vocations in the church as well?
Well, it's cool. I just mentioned how as Lutherans, we're all a team. And I have found that the burden shouldn't just fall on a single pastor to raise up future pastors. Sometimes that I've heard that, well, okay, it's pastor's job to do that. Well, why don't we work as a church together? And not just a church together, how about a circuit together or a district together? Just a couple weeks ago, one of the pastors called me, hey, circuit visitor, can you come? I've got someone in the congregation, 17-year-old kid. He's interested in becoming a pastor. Could you talk to him? And that's an awesome thing, right? We have these conversations where we can build up and identify certain traits that might make people fit for the office of the ministry. I had a great conversation with this guy, and I gave him my roadmap, right? Okay, you should be looking at the Concordia University system, preferably Nebraska. And then, okay, here's what the seminary would look like. And there's a lot of assistance from the congregation. I like to encourage congregations, hey, we should be supporting our own to become pastors. The need is great. Let's help meet that need. And the district is often supporting with programs too. Again, the Set Apart to Serve program. I know many congregations in this district have been using that curriculum. And again, the idea is it should not be a single pastor alone or a single congregation alone. We got to be working together as Lutherans together as a team to raise up men to be pastors for sure.
What does that look like in your congregation? Certainly someone encouraging you to talk with a young man. Are there other things that your congregation may be doing to encourage young people or even second career folks to consider church work vocations?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. I had someone in a second career setting come up to me interested in becoming a pastor in this congregation. And I found a lot of it is having some kind of hands-on ministry exposure and seeing how people respond, right? Do you fit in serving the poor, being part of our ministry and outreach, helping with VBS, helping in worship. And I try very hard to get men involved in these situations and these roles so I can see their interests grow. One of the men who just came up to me recently, he's been serving with me in worship in an altar assistant kind of role for some time now. And he's heard the word spoken to him and he's seen me practice what I do. He's come on visits with me. And he's risen in interest that way. So I find the best way to raise up pastors is first kind of expose them to what pastors do. Being a pastor, if you don't know what being a pastor is like, it's very nebulous territory. Okay, I see them preaching on Sunday. When I was 7 years old, I thought that was what being a pastor was. I get to preach on Sunday and everyone listens to me. No, it's a lot more than that. It's visiting the poor. It's caring for this congregation. There's a lot of administrative responsibilities of being a pastor. And I found the best way to raise up pastors is to expose slowly candidates for that role.
With all those duties, with all the things that as a 7-year-old you may not see, but now that you're in this vocation, you know more fully what it is to be serving in this role. How do you stay sharp? How do you stay on top of all of those different duties and responsibilities? I mean, even just that short list of what you said requires a lot of different skills in a lot of different areas of being functional. How do you stay on top of all of that and to be able to serve to the best of your ability?
Well, that's a great question, Sarah. And I mentioned earlier that I think it's awful for a pastor to plateau, to stop learning. In fact, when I think about what it means to be a pastor and to continue to grow, I think of Jesus' parable of the servants who received talents, 5 talents, 2 talents, 1 talent, right? You remember this parable? Mm-hmm. And the master leaves 5 and 2 and 1, and the wicked servant, he hides his talent in the ground. I like to focus on what the servants did with 5 and 2. They didn't just sit on it. They grew their talents. They continued to use their master's abundance for his glory. And so it's true for pastors. We need to continue to learn and grow and take our talents and grow them. If we're sitting on them, maybe we are not doing our duty as pastors, as Christ's representatives. So I like to continue to read, continue to, the district offers a lot of resources for workshops. I've been applying for the Doctorate of Ministry program at Concordia Seminary, right, to continue to learn and grow that way and continue to be challenged by different perspectives or different pastors, right? I don't want to just be confirmed in my own biases as a pastor. It's very easy for pastors who are lone wolves just to think, okay, what I'm doing is good and right, and I don't have to change anything. I want to continue to be challenged by people who are smarter than me. Standing on the shoulders of giants, I think the expression goes. And so I continue to learn and grow because that's my duty as a pastor, as a Christ representative.
Joy in serving, joy in learning, mm-hmm. lots of joy Amen. In being a pastor. Yes. Our guest today, the Reverend Peter DeBerney, pastor of Grace Lutheran Church in Mastic Beach, New York. Pastor DeBerney, thanks for being our guest on the Coffee Hour.
My pleasure, and God's blessings to you all in your ministry.
You can learn more about Set Apart to Serve by visiting lcms.org/SAS. You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.